Hi, for those of you who I have not met, I'm Jeff Science. I'm the Deputy Director for Management at OMB and the Federal Chief Performance Officer. I want to welcome all of you to the chilly White House today, and thank you for coming here. It's an important day. My job is to help make government more efficient and effective and work as well as the American people expect and deserve. As we all know, a productivity boom has transformed private sector performance over the past two decades. These productivity gains are familiar to all of us. They've transformed entire industries. The market leaders driving these productivity gains have increased output, lowered prices, and boosted customer satisfaction all at the same time. Unfortunately, the federal government has almost entirely missed out on these gains. We need to catch up and catch up fast. We need to make government more productive, efficient, and responsive. And IT, information technology, is the key. Technology has been at the center of those productivity gains I just mentioned, both efficiency gains and service quality improvements. But despite spending more than $600 billion on information technology across the last decade, the federal government has failed to realize the potential of information technology. Too often, federal IT projects run over budget, behind schedule, and fail to ever deliver their promised functionality. Fixing IT is our top priority, and we've been focused on this since the beginning of the administration. Let me give you a quick update on our progress, and then I'm going to hand it over to Vivek for the rest of the session. Last year, we launched the IT dashboard, where you can monitor every dollar the government spends on large technology projects. We're using the information on the dashboard to power what we call TechStat sessions, where we get all the stakeholders in a project, both technology and business line owners, together in the same room to diagnose problems and agree on what's necessary to fix a project. This summer, we targeted high-priority projects for review, projects that were either over budget, behind schedule, or at a high risk for the kinds of problems that too often plague our IT efforts. We identified 26 high-priority projects. We completed the review of two of those projects in October, and today we're pleased to announce the results of the next 16. Here's the breakdown of the 16 projects. One project has been terminated altogether, as we were clearly throwing good money after bad. For seven projects, we've significantly accelerated delivery of meaningful functionality, insisting on new functionality every few quarters rather than every couple of years. For eight projects, we've reduced budgets and scaled the projects back to increase the likelihood of success. So across all 16 projects, we've cut delivery time by more than 50% and reduced lifecycle budgets by $1.3 billion. Overall, we've now reviewed more than 50 major IT projects, reducing lifecycle budgets by $3 billion. So we now know that we can improve our IT performance on a project-by-project basis, saving money and accelerating delivery. But just as importantly, we're using the learning from this work to identify the structural changes required to drive sustainable improvements across all of government IT. The Federal CIO Council has been very active in our work. We've gotten input from folks on the Hill, and we've been working very closely with the private sector. The President brought 50 CEOs to the White House to advise us on what works and what doesn't in managing IT. And industry groups have put forward strong, thoughtful recommendations. As a result, we now have a clear understanding of the structural changes we need to make to achieve sustained performance improvement. We all believe that IT, government IT, needs to be more agile and responsive to evolving technologies and more accountable and focused on delivering results. But to get this done, we need to remove the barriers that get in the way of consistent execution. We are making five structural changes. We are first adopting light technologies and shared services. Second, aligning the budget and acquisition process with the technology cycle. Third, strengthening program management. Fourth, streamlining governance and increasing accountability. And last, we are increasing engagement with the IT community. When I announced these changes just before Thanksgiving, I noted this is one of those rare occasions in life, rarer still here in Washington, where all the parties agree on the root cause problems and share a common understanding of what needs to be done. This isn't the stuff of controversial frameworks or radical new approaches. The bottom line is that it's all about execution. To that end, we're moving forward with our execution plan. Vivek will review today the specific actions we're taking. For each action, we've identified clear owners and deadlines, and today we're looking forward to getting your feedback and help in refining our execution plan. I want to thank you for all your help to date and ask that you work with us and hold us accountable for executing on our plan with discipline and urgency. With that, let me hand it over to Vivek to moderate today's session. Vivek. Thank you.
Good morning. How's everyone doing? Excellent. So what I'd like to do today is walk you through the 25-point implementation plan. We just posted it on cio.gov. You can find all the details in terms of the reforms that we're going to be advancing. I'd like to begin by talking about the results that have been achieved so far when it comes to the financial reviews and also the tech stats on the 26 high-priority IT systems. If you look at this data, as we reviewed 38 projects across the federal government, what we've been able to do by driving accountability, by making sure that we were looking at what works, what doesn't work, by making sure that we're making the tough decisions that are required to turn around some of the worst-performing IT projects, we've been able to reduce the budget of these IT projects by $3 billion. More important than reducing the budget by $3 billion is the fact that we've been able to accelerate delivery by 50%, over 50%. Think about some of these IT projects that we've talked about. They've had deliverables out there that are 5-10 years out with nothing delivered. In a lot of cases, what we've seen is 7 years later, what the government got was nothing more than an architectural document. That is why these fundamental reforms are going to change the way we manage information technology moving forward. There are two major areas that we're focused on where the United States government spends billions of dollars. The first area is around commodity IT, where we spend approximately $24 billion every year. The second area is around how we actually manage large-scale IT programs. These are all the programs where we're modernizing the United States government. This represents approximately $50 billion in IT spending. And this is an area where we've had persistent problems that go back decades of major IT projects that just haven't delivered for the American people. What I'd like to do right now is just give you the highlights of how are we actually going to make these changes stick? What are the fundamental differences between the previous efforts that have been tried? Well, I want to begin by saying that this is not about some radical new framework or breakthrough thinking, but you can go back to the Clinger-Cohen Act, the eGov Act. You can actually look at the FAR. All along, we've actually talked about how the U.S. government needs to move towards a model where we're simplifying the way we buy technology. At the same time, we need to make sure that we're focused on execution. It's not about these grand designs, but it's about actually executing. So number one, what we're committing to is that we're going to turn around or terminate at least one-third of the underperforming projects within the next 18 months. Number two, we're going to shift to a cloud-first policy, and what agencies are going to do in the next 3 months is identify minimum of 3 systems that can move to the cloud and execute within the next 1 year. Number three, we're committing to reducing the number of data centers by at least 800 by 2015. Number four, OMB will only approve funding for major programs that actually have a dedicated program manager. This sounds really basic, but you'll be shocked by the number of major programs that don't have a dedicated program manager. We will only approve funding if agencies are using a modular approach with deliverables that are meaningful, deliverables that are not 5, 6, 7 years out, but actually breaking them down into 6-month chunks. And finally, we're going to make sure that there's specialized IT professionals who are working on these major programs, because buying complex, large-scale IT programs is not the same as buying pencils. We're also going to work closely with Congress to make sure that we're consolidating commodity funding when it comes to departments and agencies under the agency CIO. A department like HUD, which has over 200 data centers, or sorry, Department of Interior has over 200 data centers, that doesn't make sense. And the reason is because the way the department is funded, it's bureau by bureau, program by program, which leads to great inefficiencies and wasteful, duplicative spending across the federal government. We're also going to work with Congress to make sure that we actually give agencies and CIOs the budget flexibilities actually necessary to make sure that we can deploy these projects in a modular, agile fashion. I've been working right now late at night on the 2012 budget, and it's not fair to hold agencies accountable 2 years out in terms of what they're going to spend their IT dollars on. And then when they're not meeting those targets, OMB drags them and says, why did you fail to meet these targets? You committed to making sure that you would hit these 29 feature sets. Their congressional hearings, it's unfair, it's a structural problem, and frankly, this model won't work because the technology cycles moves way too fast for the budget cycle. And lastly, what we're going to do is we're going to launch an interactive online platform to make sure that the industry is engaged in the pre-RFP phase so that you know what the U.S. government is looking to buy not after a procurement hits the street, but before. We want to be able to benefit from the ideas and the thinking out there. We've seen programs that move aggressively in terms of looking at technologies that are out there. They end up making better decisions. Unfortunately, there's a chilling effect across the government where some people believe that you're going to go to jail if you start talking to the vendors before you put out the RFP or after you put out the RFP. And there are a whole host of myths that exist out there that need to be demystified. So this platform will be critical in making sure that we're getting the best thinking around how we can procure technology intelligently. Now, why is adopting light technologies and shared services important? The reason is we've seen the number of data centers grow explosively. We went from 432,000 data centers to 2,094 data centers this year, and we're still counting as we continue to do our inventory. And what we're committing to is making sure within the next 6 months, every agency will identify a dedicated program manager for the data center consolidation effort, and we're going to launch a task force so that when we're optimizing our assets, it's not just within a department, but across the federal government. Think about an open table for data centers. Right now, you can make reservations to your favorite restaurant online. Why don't we have the same system for data center capabilities across the federal government? So if somebody at HUD or EPA needs space, what if they could find it in another agency that's about to spend $500 million? We're going to launch that within the next 12 to 18 months. We've talked about shifting to cloud-first policy, but what that really means in terms of execution is that within the next 6 months, we're actually going to put in place infrastructure as a service contract that's certified government-wide from a security perspective so we can start leveraging that. But more importantly, a fundamental shift to cloud. If you think about email systems, if you think about financial systems, we want to be able to put in place government-wide vehicles so that we can stop wasting money. GSA and USDA have all done an amazing job by moving to the cloud. GSA was able to cut its cost by 50% and saved $15 million as it engages in its move to the cloud. The USDA is actually going to be saving approximately $6 million a year with its shift to the cloud. But more importantly, it's freeing up resources from the CIOs to do work that's higher yield and adds value to the everyday Americans. We're also going to be rethinking our entire shared services strategy. The last time this was visited was almost a decade ago, and the technology landscape was very, very different. Today, we may be able to deploy better services at lower costs in a federated web services, API-driven world that's going to allow us to deploy some of these technologies much faster at a fraction of the cost that we've deployed it in. I want to share with you this story at the Department of Interior and the great work that's happened with the leadership from Bernie and Andrew. Now, Department of Interior, here's an example of why light technologies are important. This is one of the projects that we reviewed as part of the high priority projects. The Department of Interior was able to, by applying light technologies and shared services, reduce the lifecycle costs of their infrastructure investments by $500 million and is committing to go from 210 data centers down to 115 data centers by 2015. What you're seeing here is this $36 million saving over the next 5 years as a result of moving to the cloud. But more importantly, what you're seeing is this massive reduction, 55% reduction in data centers. And that's not just in managing those assets. What that does is it actually focuses the CIOs and the agency in the wrong place. So I want to recognize the great leadership that Interior is providing when it comes to adopting lightweight technologies. Another area for us that's really, really important is to make sure that we're strengthening program management. Unfortunately, program management is not even a career track within the federal government. Yet, program managers are the ones who are spending hundreds of millions and billions of dollars every year on information technology. And what's happened is we've unfairly plucked people from various jobs and said, today you're going to be responsible for a $100 million project without arming them with the appropriate training, without making sure that there's a community where they can share best practices, without making sure that their role is lifted up so they're not buried 10 layers deep within the bureaucracy. That is why, working with OPM in the next 6 months, we're going to be designing a formal IT program management career path with direct hire authority for agencies. As we were reviewing some of these projects through the TechSat accountability sessions, in one example at the Department of Homeland Security, the CIO was so frustrated, it took him 5 months to bring on board a program manager for a critical project. That direct hire authority is vital. And then we want to be able to scale that program management career path across the federal government, but first we're going to pilot it with a number of agencies. We also want to be able to make sure that we have integrated project teams as a precursor of launching any major project with the leadership from the acquisition community, the CFO, the business side, and the technology world, the architects, the engineers who are looking at these solutions. Unfortunately, the world we live in today, what ends up happening is people are hiding behind their emails, going back and forth, and the incentives are not aligned. The procurement community has its incentives, the program management community has its incentives, the tech, the architects have their own incentives. By integrating these teams, the shared incentives to make sure that we're advancing the delivery of this project in a meaningful way at low cost is going to be much, much easier when you actually have these teams that are co-located and are precursors to major programs. The Federal CIO Council is also going to launch a best practices portal. And initially, this portal is going to be focused very much around program management. If we look at what's happening across the federal government, the colossal failures that we've seen across the federal government, but more importantly, the great projects within the federal government where things have worked really, really well, there isn't a central repository of that knowledge. That information is not shared across the government. It's within departments or bureaus. And frankly, what we need to be able to do is share those best practices so everybody can learn from successes and failures within the federal IT community. We're also going to be launching a technology fellows program modeled after the Presidential Management Fellows Program. And this is really exciting because I get countless people who approach me when I'm traveling all over the country around how they can give back to their country. And we don't have a formal mechanism to engage them. We don't have a formal mechanism to bring in fellows who can come in for a 1 year or 6 month stints and help us change the way we manage IT or introduce us to some of the new technologies that are out there, but more importantly, the ability to actually build a pipeline of talent for the next generation of innovations that we need to drive across the federal government. We also need to be able to go back to the eGov Act, where an authority was built around making sure that the industry and the government could actually begin rotations, where you could have somebody from the industry come into the government and work on a set of projects, and somebody from the government could go to the industry. The reason it didn't work was because I think there are a lot of conflicts of interest. And I think the challenge is going to be, how do you do that without conflicts of interest? Well, you don't do it with technology companies. There are plenty of enterprises out there that have huge operating units, you know, from Starbucks, which is a global enterprise, to looking at companies like Alcoa and figuring out, well, how do we get some of the folks who are working on large-scale IT projects to rotate between the federal government and the private sector? Now, here is an example of what happens when you don't have good program management. Richard Spires and I reviewed this program as part of one of the high-priority projects. This was a project where the government spent $40 million in 7 years, and it got a system that didn't work, code that was buggy, and unfortunately, you know, when we looked at it, we dug deeper, we realized, well, they really didn't have a dedicated program manager, there were no performance metrics, they weren't providing the appropriate oversight on contractors. That is why we made the decision to terminate this project. And that is going to be the future of projects that don't deliver. We want to make sure that we do not continue to throw good money after bad money. And the old path here would have been to continue to spend this money until this project became a national headline, and then it would have been canceled. But we want to be proactive. We want to crack down on wasteful spending across the federal government. Now, one of the biggest challenges that confronts the IT community is the fact that we haven't really aligned our acquisition processes with the technology cycle or our budget processes with the technology cycle. Dan Gordon and I are going to be working very closely on making sure when it comes to aligning the acquisition process with the technology cycle, we actually have meaningful reform. One of the things we're going to be doing within the next 6 months is designing and developing a cadre of specialized IT acquisition professionals. We also want to be able to make sure that we're identifying some of the best practices that already exist. Similar to the program management, within the acquisition community, the challenge has been that for years, we've known that we should move towards a modular, agile methodology. As a matter of fact, Dan and I looked at the FAR language, and it's clearly spelled out there. The question is, well, why isn't it happening? The reason is because historically, we haven't been very execution-focused because agencies want to move towards agile, modular, but they don't know how to do it, or we haven't provided the right tools. How do we put in place the appropriate templates that support modular development? How do we make sure that we have model language that it can plug into their contract? How do we make sure that these integrated teams are coming together as they're deciding the future of some of these IT projects? That is critical in terms of what we're going to be doing next. But one of the areas that I'm very, very excited about is item number 16 here. Reducing the barriers to entry for small, innovative technology firms. And the reason that's really important is that the government, unfortunately, ends up spending millions of dollars sometimes when they could find an innovative solution that could cost pennies on that dollar. And the reason is because a lot of the startups that I talk to, their view is, you know, we don't really want to deal with the federal government because your procurement processes are too complicated. We don't even know how it works. By the time, you know, we get on the schedules, it's too late. I was talking to the founder of Hotmail, who told me that, look, you know, from the moment he started Hotmail to the moment he sold it for over $400 million and millions of users, that entire period was 18 months. And he joked, he said, it would take me 18 months just to get on your GSA schedules, right? And so we need to fundamentally hit the reset button on that, and that's why working closely with SBA, GSA, and Dan Gordon, we're going to advance a set of policies that allow us to attract some of the most innovative companies to do business with the federal government. Here's an example of aligning the acquisition cycle with the technology cycles does for projects. This is another one of the projects that we reviewed as part of our high priority reviews. The VA had spent over a decade trying to modernize its benefits systems. Unfortunately, the way they were approaching it historically was this old world, boil the ocean, multi-year approach that frankly didn't really yield any results. When they shifted to saying, you know what, the way we need to fundamentally rethink this is to move to modular, move to agile, and more importantly, make sure that the contracting officer is part of the integrated project team, they were able to put in place a new contract that was based on agile and modular. And the outcome for the VA after spending nearly a decade trying to achieve these results is that now they're actually delivering customer-facing functionality every 6 months. That's a huge turnaround story. And this is a vital program for our veterans in terms of making sure that they don't have to go through paper forms and don't know what the status of where their applications are. These reforms make sure that we deliver functionality much, much faster. Another area of huge concern for us is around the budget processes. And I've spent a lot of time on the budget processes, so I can tell you with firsthand experience in terms of how broken that is. If you think about the time it takes to actually put together these plans, to fill out the OMB 300s, to try to look at the crystal ball and figure out what you're going to be doing, you know, 2 years out, And then, you know, given the average lifespan of CIOs, which is about 24 months, what happens is a new person comes in and they ask the question, well, what did I really inherit here? I have a new idea. And what it also does, by the way, is that the way that budgets are structured, unfortunately, has perverse incentives, where agencies feel like they need to continue spending or OMB or Congress is going to sweep their money. Therefore, there's no incentive to actually halt a project when it's not working. That is why we keep seeing agencies throw good money after bad money. We want to work closely with Congress over the next 6 months to create models around how we can align the budget processes with agile modular development. We also want to be able to then quickly scale some of the models to make sure that it's applied across the government. Some agencies have the flexibilities, others don't. So in number 18, what we want to be able to make sure is that agencies are using the authorities they already have. And a number of agencies, as we did our listening sessions, what they realized was they had these authorities, but they never really used them, or they hadn't had the conversations with the CFOs to figure out how they could use the authorities that were necessary. But more importantly, this is going to be one of the toughest areas in my mind, because we're also going to need to work closely to make sure that we're able to consolidate commodity IT under the CIO. The reason I believe that this reform is fundamental to going after that $24 billion in spending is that if we don't drive the structural reform, we're going to end up in the same place where we're appropriating funding bureau by bureau, program by program, but are not looking at expenditures horizontally, where you find the greatest efficiencies. So these reforms are going to actually help us make sure that we don't continue to throw good money after bad money because we're worried that we're going to lose that funding, but also rationalize our investments in infrastructure across the federal government. Here's an example of a project that we reviewed at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. So Simone from Commerce and I looked at this project, and one of the interesting things here is that USPTO made a bold decision to halt a project that wasn't really working. And I asked the question, you know, well, how come you guys were able to halt it where other agencies would have continued to spend money? One of the reasons is because, unlike other agencies, given how their funding works, they're able to make optimal decisions rather than suboptimal decisions. And now what they're doing is they're implementing a lot of these reforms, and as a result, we've been able to reduce the budget of this investment by $99.5 million. And more importantly, we're going to be enabling faster reviews of patents across the country. Streamlining governance and increasing accountability. How many of you, the CIOs here, have sat before countless governance bodies when a project is actually healthy? I see Jerry here at HUD who's raised his hand. And the challenge here is you have a number of bodies that are created to look at how these projects perform. And frankly, a lot of times these are toothless governance bodies. They can't make decisions. They don't have the rights to make those decisions. Yet, one after the other, you know, wants to know what's going on. As we're reviewing a number of these projects, what we found ourselves doing was going through seven or eight layers of governance bodies before we got to the person who actually was managing the program or knew, you know, what they were doing. The challenge, unfortunately, here is this is very harmful for how we manage information technology projects, because what you get is a false sense of security, because everybody's responsible, nobody's responsible, and what you create is a culture of faceless accountability. That is why in the next 6 months, what we're committing to do is to reform and strengthen the investment review boards. What we're planning on doing is working with the deputy secretaries and agency CIOs. We're going to literally productize the TechSet accountability session model. We've proven that this model is execution focused. It produces results. It allows you to make the tough decisions that are necessary, and it produces better functionality faster at lower costs. So rather than trying to lead with a memo, what we're going to be leading with is execution. We also are going to redefine the role of the agency CIO and the Federal CIO Council so that it's not just focused on policy, that the roles are focused much more on execution, operations, portfolio management. And frankly, a lot of the CIOs have wanted to do this for years, but they haven't had a seat at the table, or technology was relegated to, you know, these are the people that fix BlackBerries and manage servers. And what we want to be able to do is make sure that they've got the appropriate authority and they've got the appropriate oversight mechanisms. We briefed the president and the president's management council on these reforms. And the deputy secretaries are very, very excited about this. And over the next 2 months, I'm going to be meeting with the deputy secretaries and the CIO on these individual sessions to talk about how we actually fundamentally rethink how the role of the CIO and their offices work and how we shift some of those resources that are purely focused on policy and move them towards portfolio management and execution. We also want to then roll the tech stat model at the bureau level. The Department of Interior, by the way, is doing an excellent job in this area. They've started an iStat model where they've been able to make meaningful progress, and they've taken on some of the toughest issues that confront that department. But scaling this government-wide is what's going to help us produce the results that we're looking for. HUD is an example of where, over the years, when you didn't have governance that allowed you to go after some of these projects, what you ended up with is an ad hoc fragmented model that lacked performance controls. This is a project or set of projects that we reviewed with Jerry. Jerry and I both looked at this in great detail. And as a result of this, what we've been able to do is cut down the scope of these projects from 29 projects down to 7. We've been able to collapse layers of inadequate oversight. And the result has been that we've been able to reduce the budget by $124 million and accelerated implementation with 6-month deliverables rather than having deliverables that are 5 to 10 years out on 29 simultaneous projects as far as executing transformation. Imagine if we could do that for every single project at every single bureau. Increasing engagement with the industry is critical to making sure that the government knows what it's buying and the industry knows what it's selling. I've talked to a lot of people who've left the government and have moved onto the private sector, and what they tell me is 90% of the time they're all guessing and have strategic sessions to figure out what are these people really thinking in the government when they write these RFPs. What we need to be able to do is we need to be crystal clear on what our requirements are, and we need to be crystal clear when things aren't working. That is one of the reasons Dan Gordon is going to lead a Mythbusters education campaign to make sure that the government understands, you know, what can you and can you not do. There are a number of myths that Dan will mention that have been propagated over the years where people believe you can't talk to the industry, where people believe that when you're down selecting, you can't really sit down with the vendors and try to negotiate an optimal contract, where people believe, you know, all sorts of things that actually lead to RFPs that seem like they're written in the 1980s because people haven't really had conversations with the industry over the years. And we also want to make sure that the platform that I talked about allows us to get innovative ideas early. When we were launching recovery.gov, one of the things we did is we actually started a national dialogue online, and we got thousands of people who came on board. And what we said is, we don't know what the right answer is. What technologies are out there? What are the right approaches? And the RFP actually benefited because the board realized, wow, there are all these new technologies, there are all these new approaches. We had no idea. Whereas the old model would have been a few government officials would have gone behind closed doors, written an RFP, put it out on the street, and the industry would start playing guessing games in terms of what people are thinking. An award would have been made, and the program people would have said, this is not what I was looking for. It sucks, but the procurement takes too long, so I'll just, you know, move forward with this. and then the project would get killed. We want to end that by increasing engagement. Here's an example of what the FBI has done to make sure that they're hardwiring their contracts to engage the industry as they move through various phases. This is another project we reviewed as part of the 26 projects. So if you look at their next generation fingerprinting system, what the FBI did is they decided to say, you know what, we can't really predict what technologies are going to be out there and which companies are going to be the most innovative companies. So they structure their contract by saying, you know, we're going to make sure that we engage the industry before we award high-dollar task orders or high-dollar contracts to the industry, because iris technology is evolving, fingerprinting technology is evolving. And what that's been able to do is it's actually allowed them to move very, very fast in much smaller phases, and it's actually allowed them to achieve phenomenal results. But it started from the very, very beginning in terms of how they structured their entire contract. And we're super excited about how we can leverage some of these platforms to make sure that this is available government-wide. Now, how do these reforms change the status quo? I'm sure many of you are asking. The 25-point implementation plan sounds great. And I've spent the last 2 years working with the Federal CIO Council, working with many of you in the industry, with think tanks, the CEOs that the president invited as part of modernizing IT within the federal government. And consistently, we've heard, you know, how we need to break projects into modular, agile approaches. We need to make sure that we're delivering functionality faster. That is why what we're doing is we're going to be using modular approach. And the reason we're using the modular approach is to make sure that we can drive average size and duration down and drive the success rate of the nearly $50 billion we spend up, because that's going to lower complexity. Second, we want to improve the yield on the $24 billion in IT infrastructure spending, and we want to shift that spending away from redundant, duplicative systems to mission programs. And third, utilizing the cloud-first approach, we actually want to move to a world where we're provisioning solutions on demand at up to 50% lower cost per unit. If you look at the great work that Chris Smith is doing at USDA by moving to the cloud, or what Casey Coleman's doing at GSA by moving to the cloud, the math is clear. But more important than the math, what's really important is it shifts their role away from owning data centers, building custom systems, to basically provisioning them very much like you would utilities. All these reforms are fundamental to making sure that we execute consistently across the board, and we look forward to working with you on making sure that these reforms are executed, and we want you to hold us accountable. That is why the way we've designed this plan, I've made sure that it's no longer than 18 months, and it's broken into six-month chunks. So every 6 months, we've made sure that there's specific tasks that we would deliver against. So you have a 0 to 6 months, 6 to 12 months, and 12 to 18 months, because we want to focus on execution, not sit in a room and write more policy. So with that, I want to thank you very much, but I want to invite to the stage Dan Gordon to join me for questions that you may have. Thank you very much. Do you have the mic? Your mic's over here. I think we've got people coming up with mics for questions. Great. And if you have questions, we've got two people so that we can, if anyone else has a question, Ari over there can bring the mic to you.
Yeah, Ray Maslimani from GCE. Derek, how soon do you think you can get agencies to begin using the cloud-first model?
Well, I think it's already happening, right? The examples that I cited, not just at USDA and GSA, but also from the Recovery Board to HHS, a number of agencies are already moving in that direction. So what we're going to be doing in the next 6 months is making sure that there are specific systems that are identified with very, very specific migration strategies to the cloud. And Dan, maybe you can talk a little bit about the work we're going to be doing on the procurement front.
Sure. Thanks for that. The fact is that, as you all heard, acquisition and improving acquisition practices are going to play a key role in improving the way we buy IT. There are several points that you mentioned. It may be worth highlighting a couple of things. And I should point out, by the way, that the audience we have here today is sort of emblematic of the approach that we're taking, because we have people from industry here and government together in the same room talking to one another, a very important thing for us to do. And among the government people here, we have people from the IT world, and we have people from the program shops, and we have people from the contracting offices, another part of what we're doing. We have got to be integrating on the government side from day one, so that our acquisition planning, especially the requirements definition, is a shared effort. Because too often, as you know, and as you heard in the TxDOT sessions, once you run into problems and you start asking what was the root cause, it turned out that the requirements definition was never done properly. So those teams need to be working together. As you said, we're going to be working hard to have a specialized cadre of contracting people who specialize in IT. Some agencies are doing that. We'll be looking over the next 6 months, another one of our chunks. We'll be looking at how those are succeeding so that we can roll that model out across the government. And a couple of points I want to just emphasize in your presentation. We need to take better advantage of flexibilities that we already have. We're not saying we need new statutes. I don't think we need changes to the federal acquisition regulation. What we need is to take better advantage of the flexibilities we have. One of the things that, as you know, our office, the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, is going to be doing is improving communication with industry through, as you called it, our myth busting. We don't need new regulations, but we do need a lot more communication. We need it early. We need it often. So we're going to be rolling out that myth-busting campaign over the next few weeks to improve communication with industry. We'll be working with lawyers on both sides, obviously, to be sure that we do it in a legal way, but we have got to have more communication. And one more word, if I could, in terms of the chunking of the work itself. Procurement reform in the 1990s gave us the tools to do that. We put a section into the FAR that talks about modular contracting of IT. We've got the tools there, as you mentioned. We've got to use those tools better. So we will be working to provide guidance not only to the contracting people who are most familiar with the FAR, but also to the IT people, the program people, so they understand how task orders work, how IDIQ contracts work, how fair opportunities work, so that we can really make this happen in execution.
Vivek, okay, thank you. We talked the 25 actions to really create transformation in IT in the government. Wonderful. I'd like you to expand a little bit about, you talked about 6, 12, 18 months, metrics. How do we know these 25? How can we measure their success?
Well, so we will make sure that we're actually providing updates at the end of each of the chunks. So every 6 months, we will release our progress report in terms of how we're performing against these metrics. And again, this is not going to happen just with Dan Gordon and I, right? If you look at how the work has been distributed, it's across the government. And we're going to be very, very laser beam focused on making sure that over the course of the next 18 months, that our mission is to make sure that we're delivering against all 25 of these points. Now, this is obviously not going to be an easy job. It's going to take a lot of hard work and some heavy lifting. And we're looking forward to working closely with Congress also to drive some of these meaningful reforms.
Gentlemen, I'm Bob Gorley with CTOvision.com, the blog, and I wanted to say a lot of my readers are going to be very interested in this tech fellowship program, and I expect you'll see a lot of applications. I'm wondering if I'm too old to apply, but a more serious question. I didn't hear anywhere in here mention of telecommunication services. Do you consider telecommunication services IT? Because in the opinion of a lot of folks, it's still procured in a very industrial age way. Also, I didn't hear mention of the cybersecurity thrust and the need for dramatically increased cybersecurity in the federal space.
Sure. So with both of, in terms of telecom, it's actually part of what I would consider commodity IT. And that's why going after that $24 billion in spending is very, very important. And in terms of cyber, I don't think it's a point. It cuts through everything we do. That is why the president, when he came into office, ordered a top-down review of our cybersecurity posture, and we've been shifting the work in cybersecurity away from just paperwork reports to actually meaningful work where we're standing up red teams and blue teams at DHS to go after our own systems. So we're not spending, you know, months writing a report, but we're actually remediating the problems we have. I think there's a question over here.
Dan Matthews with Information Innovators. I applaud the attempt here to get investment review boards more formalized. Would you talk a little bit about the relationship between the CFO's office and the budget office in the process of developing a standardized approach to IRBs across the departments?
Sure. So what we're actually going to be doing in terms of blowing up the IRBs is taking not just the lessons learned in the TechStat model, but literally providing the tools, such as a software that we use to manage action items, to manage accountability across the board, but also the OMB team is going to work with the CIOs to fundamentally re-engineer those boards and the deputy secretaries. So when we sat down with the President's Management Council, that was, IT is one of the top agenda items in terms of driving these reforms. What you can't do, the typical IRB agenda right now, is a two-hour slice of time where they're going through 20 projects. There's no way you can provide meaningful oversight. We spend on a single TechStat session, you know, over a month in many cases, and hundreds of hours going back and forth trying to figure out what the root cause of these problems are.
Hi, Paul Brubaker from Cisco. First of all, kudos to you for, it's very clear that you've looked at your authority under Clinger Cohen and are planning to execute it, and that's very exciting. You mentioned that you were gonna redefine the CIO role, and as you do that, I would just suggest that maybe if you look at the CIO position description that was in the report language of Clinger Cohen, that would be most helpful. Got three real quick ones. Is there going to be money and time commitments made available for training of the PMs and the acquisition folks? Secondly, on the myth-busting campaign, are you going to reach out to the IGs and the ethics officials, because it seems to be their mission to scare everybody into not communicating? And lastly, on the collaboration tool that you're going to put in for pre-RFP communication between industry and government, is that going to be in the cloud?
I think all questions that have the word cloud in them go to Vivek. But except for that part, let me say a few words about the first two questions. The money for the training, for the specialized IT acquisition core cadre, that is, money is a challenge. Budgets are very tight. Budgets are very tight, and they're not going to get easier as we move into the new calendar year. I think everybody in the room is aware of that. That's why we will be working with the agencies to find ways to get this training done within what we have today. You probably know, Paul, that we've been working with the Congress to add money for the acquisition workforce, which would include the program managers, the COTRs, and of course the 1102s, the contract specialists, contracting officers. But money is very tight, and I can't predict where we're going to end up, obviously, with the 2011 budget, much less the 2012 budget. but we do need to work on it. I will tell you that we've got a head start. We have training, we in OFPP have got training programs where we've been working with the Federal Acquisition Institute as well as the Defense Acquisition University and the VA's Acquisition Academy up in Frederick. We've got programs for program management training and obviously CO training and our 1102 training. So we have a good basis. We'll have to do what we can in terms of the budget. About the myth busting, we're keenly aware of the fact that there is often fear on the part of the government people that if they talk to government, if they talk to industry, they're going to get in trouble. If they conduct discussions during a procurement, they're going to end up with a bid protest on their hands. We got to get past that, folks. There are too many situations where, for example, we don't conduct discussions. We make award based on initial proposals. We're leaving money on the table. We cannot afford that. There could be a better technological solution that we're not finding out about because we're afraid to talk with industry. We need to work with the Office of Government Ethics. We need to work with the attorneys, and we can meet with the IGs as well if need be. We have got to have our people be comfortable using authorities that they already have to meet with industry, to listen to industry, without giving anybody an unfair competitive advantage. We can do this if we work our way through it, listening to all those who want to advise us, listening, and then giving clear guidance about what the do's are, and not only what the don'ts are. Right? Let me turn over the last question to you about the cloud, right? Got the word cloud there. That's cloud is a four-letter. Oh, no, cloud is a good thing.
And yes to cloud. Next question.
Tim Young with Deloitte. Two quick questions. The first of which, admittedly, will come across as pandering. What can industry do to help you implement this? And then secondly, what steps are you taking to help institutionalize these reforms such that changes in personality or potentially administration don't impede the impact and the implementation of them?
So I think on the second point, we're working very closely with Congress on S-920 to make sure that these reforms can be hardwired. But we're also actually looking at how we can make sure that we've created a culture within the federal government where it's not, you know, focused on just issuing a memo or policy guidance, but meaningful tools, ways to get the job done. And as part of the president's budget, there is about $50 million in the proposed budget on making sure that we have resources to execute this plan. Again, you know, we'll see what happens when the CR is over, but making sure that we're not just providing, you know, a set of guidance, but we're also fueling it with resources that are actually necessary to power it in the long term. And then with the industry, I think the industry has been actually very helpful. Many of you in this room have actually sat down with us as we've gone listening tour after listening tour, had discussions, debates around what the course is, and a number of industry organizations actually published and released their own reports, and a number of those reports actually had a set of reforms for the industry in terms of what could the industry do to make sure that when they're selling into the government, they're selling so effectively and that these projects are successful. One example is that you have a capture team that goes out there and writes a proposal. As soon as you win the contract, that capture team moves on to another project that they want to go after, and the implementation team doesn't really know what they wrote. And so there's a huge disconnect between the capture team and the implementation team. And then what ends up happening is when the industry starts some of these projects, they start off with their very senior people. Within 30 days, you've got people who've never worked on some of these projects. So I think there's a lot that the industry can also do, and a number of those proposals are actually out there that the industry generated itself.
If I could add just one word on the myth-busting campaign, we have already begun reaching out to industry as well as to the agencies. We're going to be having outreach sessions. If anybody in this room wants to help us by giving us suggestions, recommendations, you can speak, contact us in OFPP, you can contact me. Our deputy administrator is in the back, Leslie Field. She put her hand up. There we go. Leslie's back there. Feel free to contact her. We are actively seeking suggestions and recommendations about the myth-busting campaign.
I think we'll take one more question.
Hi, Vivek. Terry Takei, Department of Defense. Just a couple of comments, I think, as much as questions. First of all, I really applaud you for this work. I think you know we're looking very hard at DOD in terms of the role of the CIO and the way we're going to organize. And I think the 25 points you've laid out here very definitely are things that we're thinking of. I guess I had one request more than a question, and that would be that we really look at the whole security and the cybersecurity aspects as being as important as our efficiency drives and our cost-saving drives. I think that, in many ways, for many of us, that's going to be actually a way to drive many of the things that you want to do here. Cost savings are always a little scary for organizations, but when we can phrase them in terms of the importance from a security perspective. And I also think security is an important trade-off as you look at the way we are going to implement and make sure that we're always balancing security with where we're taking efficiencies. So we look forward to working with you very much on this.
Yeah, and I think, I can't overstate the importance of security. And our view is that it's vital, it's baked in. These reforms are targeted very much around how we manage the $80 billion portfolio. And to me, security is part of that DNA. It's not something that's separate. And then the president has already leaned forward on that with the cybersecurity policy review. But we're very excited about driving these reforms. That's why with every CIO in the DepSec, I'm going to be sitting down in one-on-one sessions to make sure that we recognize that each department is also unique, that we're driving these reforms structurally. We have tight timelines, lots of heavy lifting, but we're super excited about this agenda. I want to thank everybody here for taking the time to come early in the morning. And also, I look forward to working with all of you as we move the ball forward in transforming the way we run large-scale IT projects and manage commodity IT. Thank you very much.